You're listening to the Next Level Learning Podcast, part of the Keystone Area Education Agency.
Welcome back to the Next Level Learning Podcast. I'm Bria Baxter, along with my co-host,
Jared Borman.
So how's it going? It's been a while since we have
Yeah, it has been a while, hasn't it? It's been a few months, actually. And so I guess the reason why is probably because our podcast relies on nominations. Like, our podcast is a format where we get the chance to talk to educators that are doing amazing things in their classroom. Having a podcast that relies on that, I guess, also then means that we need nominations. So we haven't been, people have been busy, educators are busy, they're doing great things in the classroom, and I know taking that time to set aside and maybe have a conversation with us is difficult at times, but we really do rely on those nominations. So you can always go to our website. Let's do that plug right now, why don't we?
Yep.
You can always go to our website, bit.ly/NLL podcast. And on that website, we do have a nomination form where if there's an educator in our Keystone area that wants to nominate themselves, that's fine too. Nominate yourself, nominate another educator. We just want to have conversations with those educators so that way we can share their story, their strategies out there with the rest of the world. Because when we share those, we then empower other educators to try those same kind of strategies if it works with them and their learners. So I know that we haven't been getting a lot of nominations in, and that's fine. So we're not the type of podcast that will try to put something out every single week. We put something out there that we want to be quality when we get the chance to do an interview and have a conversation with an educator. So I know in the meantime, we've both been really busy.
Yeah.
Over the past few months, it seems like that us being able to do this and sit down and have a conversation about just education and instructional practice has been kind of difficult at times. I know that you've been really busy with competency-based education stuff, is that right?
Yes, and so that kind of leads us to this podcast. So I was at a statewide group that focuses on competency-based education and spreading that throughout the regions in Iowa, and I had the opportunity to hear Phil Borman speak. And so he...
Wait, hold on. Borman?
I know. Any relation there, Jared?
Yeah, I know. It's spelled the same way, too. Our last names are spelled the same way. We both, I mean, we're within an hour's driving distance, and but no, I have not seen him at any family reunions, which is ironic, so I don't know. I don't think we're related, but...
Yeah, that's yeah. Only Bormans that I know are you and Phil.
So what about Phil?
Yeah, so he is the principal at Mazzucchelli Middle School, which is part of the Holy Family Schools in Dubuque. And they had an exciting opportunity to bring in the Summit Learning Program. And that is led by Chan Zuckerberg, along with a network of others who support this shift in education to be more personalized. And they had the opportunity to go get trained after they went through the interview process, which was about 3 rounds, and they got approved. And all of the platform, the training, everything is provided to the teachers, the admin, for free.
Wow. That sounds like a great opportunity.
Yeah, but it is such a shift. So they wanted to take it kind of in baby steps, which any new program, you have to kind of get your feet wet. And so the structure that they did was a school within a school. So they have a pilot going on right now of 25 students in sixth grade. So they had the opportunity then to enroll or apply, I should say, to be a part of the Summit Learning Program. So they could do that instead of the more traditional type of schooling that you and I had.
Right. Yep. And when you came back from this and was kind of telling me about it, that sparked my interest too. And you said that we had the opportunity to go down and actually see this in action, because describing it, I don't think really fully gives us the big picture of it all.
Yes.
But to see it in practice was pretty cool. I mean, what were some of the things that you were picking up just in your observations when we went and observed that one day?
Oh my goodness. I would have to say that the student agency piece was huge. They have conversations with the students, 10 minutes per student per week. And so during that time, the student is almost empowered to decide what they're going to work on next. Where are they in relation to their goals? And so almost more of like a coaching conversation, but rather than just focusing on school, they really develop the rapport and the relationship with that child. So they talk about, oh, what did you do on the weekend? And so just really focusing almost on Maslow's. I picture kind of their needs, that basic need to then move up and have a productive learning experience.
Yeah. And so in when I was in the classroom, we also had the chance to kind of chat with some students and, and see what that was all about. And I realize that people that are listening right now probably have a million and one questions, just like what we did before we went there that day. And even when we were there that day, we still had many questions. But what's really nice is we had the opportunity then to also record some good interviews with three individuals, a teacher, an instructional coach, and the principal. So getting the perspective from all three of those people with this, it's starting small, but really it's going to end up being an instructional change, a systems change, a learning change in a way, where almost every student is going to be elevated into those upper levels of thinking more frequently. In fact, one of the things that I had a hard time sort of figuring out at the beginning with is they kept talking about personalized learning time and project time. And so I was trying to wrap my head around, like, wait, okay, so are they the same? Are they different? Or what is happening here a little bit? And so this episode is going to be our conversation with Catherine Frank, who is the sixth grade teacher who's sort of the only teacher right now who's in group of these, in charge of these 25 kids, and who's gone through the training program of this Summit Learning. And she calls the program, or the program's called EDGE.
Yes,
right? So
that's what they named it at Mazzucchelli.
Yes. And so she is a sixth grade teacher at Mazzucchelli Middle School, which is in Dubuque, Iowa. It is a private Catholic school, and they felt the need to make this change. And so she is the one that we're going to, this episode's all going to be from her perspective. So as the classroom teacher, and I know that we traditionally have this idea of teacher, what does her role look like in this?
And it's such a shift from the traditional teacher roles and responsibilities. It was just so interesting to sit down and talk with her. So, yeah, listen carefully to how her role has changed when Summit Learning was brought to their school.
Yeah, and I think the first thing that we needed to establish was we asked her, okay, so there's this project time and personalized learning time. What does that exactly look like? So let's go ahead and take a listen to what she describes it as.
So personalized learning time is 30% of their grade, and that is probably what would you would consider what we were learning back when I was younger in the classroom. It's the, you know, the formulas that you need to memorize, or the dates from, you know, the Renaissance that you need to know, that just that online content part. And then the 70% is done during project time, and that's your cognitive skills. That's you applying what you learned online to either real world problems or some type of hands-on project. Or, for example, in social studies, they learned about Athens and Sparta during their PLT time. So during the personalized learning time, they're online learning the actual content about Athens and Sparta, and they'll apply it by, we're doing a debate on Wednesday. They get to pick either they would have wanted to live in Athens or they would have wanted to live in Sparta, and which one had the better achievements. So that's kind of applying their knowledge instead of just having them read something and take a test on it, is probably what you would consider people do in the traditional classroom.
So project time is 70%, personalized learning time is 30%, and is personalized learning time a prerequisite to project time? I mean, do you automatically get into project time, or you have to...
Everyone's in project time no matter what.
Okay.
Personalized learning time is depending on where they are at on the platform or on the year page. Kind of helps to do the projects, but it's not necessarily a requirement to be able to do the projects. If they're not, if they didn't do the Athens focus area yet, they can still do the project. The platform, the Summit platform, has it embedded. There's enough information in the project that they would be able to do it without doing the focus area. But would they do a better job by having the online content part done? Yes, usually.
So ideally, the student would be working on the same content, or I should say topic, on their personalized learning time and their project time.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the average student, but then you have some students who are a little bit more behind or more advanced.
Yes, and the more advanced kids, it hasn't been a problem. The ones a little bit more behind, the only time I've really seen it be a problem is during project time in math, because they might not have learned that, they might not have got to negative numbers yet on the platform, even though they should have. I mean, it's below the average sixth grader where they should be. So then you got to kind of pull a small group and do a little teaching beforehand. So just planning that ahead.
One thing that stood out to me when Catherine was speaking is when they focus on more of that personalized learning time versus the project time, they're almost using that personalized learning time to push out those lower levels of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like the idea that they're making the emphasis 30% for personalized learning time, because that really is the lower level thinking part. The kids are still getting that at their pace with what content they're dealing with. And then the project time is your 70% of your scoring. So there is that heavier emphasis for the upper levels of thinking. Now, in your copious amount of notes, I'm sure you have this written down somewhere. Was it an hour each, or was it 90 minutes each? I can't remember.
I want to say, wasn't there a block that was 90 minutes
yes.
of the project? And then I'm not sure if then the personalized learning time, I know that was less.
Yeah, I think you're right. But in regards to that, I like the fact that you have lower level thinking, upper level thinking kind of separated in a way. But when we talk about trying to move students into the upper levels of thinking more frequently over the longer course of time, ideally, we want to try to strive for every day.
Mm-hmm.
The scheduling here is for that, mm-hmm. is to allow upper level thinking to occur and happen actively every single day, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, we think of like our traditional class periods, especially if they're only like 40 minutes long. It's how do you reach those higher level thinking activities, skills, when your time is so short? Because we know that there is a time and a place for those lower level, the basic facts, the skills, and like she talks about. But what I'm thinking too, when Catherine is speaking, when a student isn't getting those basic facts, so that personalized learning time, looking at the data, she's pulling students and creating a workshop, giving them that support that they need in order to reach that proficiency to then be able to do those projects. So I almost think like the intervention is embedded within the day.
Very much so. That's the way it sounds. And I mean, she sounds like that is, I know we're going to get more into this later in the podcast about what does her role exactly look like, and we're setting that up here. But as the facilitator, it sounds like the majority of her time is feedback, constantly looking at formative assessments, as you mentioned, and then figuring out what students need that supplemental work all the time, every mm-hmm. day, which is so important in the classroom. And I know that when we say, in a traditional scheduling format, if I have 45 minutes, an hour or so, whatever, in my classroom, that's difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're doubling down on the scheduling almost. So rather than trying to fit the lower level thinking and upper level thinking in the same class period, or trying to push it out into that online learning format, which I know that we've talked about before in multiple other podcasts with blended and flipped learning,
mm-hmm.
that they say, no, we want to provide that time face-to-face for all students, but separately. Which I think that makes so much sense. It really does. The two fit one another very well.
Absolutely. And one thing that stuck out to me too is that they don't have all the core content areas every single day. So in which that would have to be a major scheduling change if you're going to get students into the upper levels of thinking more often. You need that longer period, that 90 minutes.
Right.
So then they don't have every single core content mm-hmm. area every day.
And I know in part three of our podcast here with our interviews with Mazzucchelli, in part three, the principal, Phil Borman, he is going to talk much more at length and probably articulate it way better than we're trying to recall right now as far as what that schedule is like, because that's the how. How do you make this happen? And so that's, I think, I'm looking forward to hearing that again from Phil as to putting the logistical pieces together in making all of this happen. But I would say as an educator, if I put myself in Catherine's shoes and I say, I have two full class periods that bounce off of one another, that are over here I can just focus on the lower level thinking and then focus on the upper level thinking, that feels like that would make my facilitating job way easier. So should we also try to talk to Catherine a little bit about as far as how did this come about? Like, where did this start from? Like, was there a need in the school to start this whole summit learning or to make this shift into something that's more personalized learning? I think hearing from her as far as the background behind this, the why kind of a little bit, is important to hear. So let's cut to that quick.
So Mark Zuckerberg was having kids who had graduated come into his workforce who weren't very self-directed type of people. They just wanted things spoon-fed and they just wanted the directions. They weren't coming up with innovative ideas. And he saw what Summit was doing and wanted to be a part of it, because the great thing about Summit is it realizes, you know, kids can get information online now. It's not like when we were kids where you actually had to know it by memory. So that information is readily available to every pretty much kid with the internet. So now it's not really as much what you know, but how you can apply it. So let's take those types of knowledge and make sure the kids can use it rather than just making sure they memorized it and knew it. So I think that's probably the biggest thing, because we need to get these kids prepared for jobs that probably aren't even created yet. And things that I've noticed is when I was a math teacher for 7 years, and as a traditional teacher, I noticed, you know, I had a lot of time to get the lessons in, and but not as much time to show them that real world application or to do those word problems or as many word problems as I should. And the great thing about this is they're going to learn that formula and the lesson on the personalized learning time on the platform, and now I can take my project time and have them actually apply it. So for example, a unit we did in math was they learned how to do area and volume on the platform, so during their personalized learning time, and we applied it by they had to create their own tent, and they had to come up with the surface area for the whole tent, and the kids really loved it because they were making these huge tents, you know, and they could have like 7 sleeping bags in there. And but it was just applying it instead of just being like, yep, find the surface area of this figure. And so it's just neat to see, and the kids can get more creative with it.
So would you say then that the need here at the school specifically that you were seeing as like the major gap that made you want to start that jump into the personalized learning time and project time, was that simply you weren't seeing students cognitively operate in the upper levels frequently enough? Or
I would say yes. I don't feel like at the time I was getting as deeper thinking in math. It was probably more surface level type of math and making sure the kids knew it. I guess for me, what I like about the platform also is to get an A, you have to go above and beyond on the personalized learning time. So for me, a lot of times in math, I had kids that could get an A by just doing that minimal work, but they never really had to push themselves. So what I like about the platform is they do have to do extra work and push themselves to be able to get that A. They're not just going to get that automatic A because they got 10 out of 10 on a quiz. So
maybe what a lot of people may not understand is that Summit Learning was pretty much created by, or the concept was created by Mark Zuckerberg. And just as we heard Catherine say, that need for not seeing the right kind of thinking from his employees, that ability to not just apply skills, but to have that kind of divergent thinking in, if it doesn't work this way, what's another way of doing it, and so forth. And so when you have someone like Mark Zuckerberg, who's got a well-networked group of highly intelligent people when it comes to computer programming and coding and all that other stuff, as well as monetary resources, of course, you're going to see this program of Summit Learning be a program that, and we kind of got a little glimpse of it, is in fact, you can tell he's got some smart people working on this program, this platform itself. And then not only that, to be able to provide this to schools. I cannot remember how many schools it's up to now because they have schools apply every single year. Do you recall?
Yeah, so they have over 300.
That's
I believe
right.
It's like 330 right yep. now that are participating in Summit Learning.
Yeah, and so to be able to do that and still provide the training and the program itself, the platform itself, at a no cost, that requires monetary resources. So, if you know, Mark is probably going to be getting in touch with other CEOs and like Bill Gates and other people like that and pulling in those monetary resources in order to provide this. So I think this is really powerful in providing that need. Like he saw it on a big scale, like a job kind of scale. He saw that need. But Catherine also saw the need within her own classroom as well. Any thoughts on the classroom scale part of it?
Yeah, absolutely. But one of my thoughts, too, is the shift kind of happened, too, when Mark started having his own children.
Oh, right. Yes.
And wanting his children to be able to experience success in their education to then become productive adults that are able to be creative and think differently and problem solve and so have those skills essentially that he is wanting and seeing a need for in his organization.
Mm-hmm. A smart dude.
Yeah, absolutely. So just kind of hearing Catherine talk, her students definitely have the opportunity to think in those higher levels more frequently mm-hmm. because they have that project time. And so during that time, she references cognitive skills too. So they aren't just focusing on, okay, here's a project, go and
go play, essentially.
Go play. but they do also have, you know, the importance of reflection. She talked about a mini lesson on that. And just all of those skills that are going to give them the resources that they need to be successful in their futures.
Yep. And that tent example that she gave, that was a really cool one where, you know, I've been in those math classes where it's, here's an object that's two-dimensional on a piece of paper, find its surface area, done. Whereas now it's, no, you're going to go create your own tent, design it, find the surface area and all this other stuff. So there's that time to apply and get into the upper levels beyond that. More so than what you would probably find in a traditional classroom itself.
Yeah, and I think so many teachers are, they need to cover so much content, and mm-hmm. so that's their focus. But we think about what the students actually remember, and if they're consistently operating in those lower levels of thinking, yeah, they're learning it for probably a short period of time. They can show performance on a test, but you ask them a month or two later, it just doesn't stick with them. But if they can take it to that application phase, it stays with them longer. So it really is so important that they are getting the opportunity to think deeply about the content and apply, which certainly has the opportunity in Catherine's classroom and with the Summit Learning program.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to go into a commercial break now, and when we come back, we will hear how the changes in the students that Catherine has seen. So looking more at the thinking skills that they have.
Did you know Keystone AEA partners with 23 public and 27 non-public school districts? This means 33,000 students and 4,500 teachers, administrators, counselors, teacher librarians, and paraeducators are supported. Did you know Keystone AEA's media library offers more than 140,000 educational materials for teachers, students, and parents in a variety of formats? This includes books, DVDs, magazines, and hands-on kits. Keystone provides twice a week van delivery, taking about 11,500 items a week to area school districts. Materials can even be ordered online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. For more information, visit our Keystone AEA website at www.aea1.k12.ia.us for more information about our programs and services.
Thank you.
Welcome back. So we are with Catherine Frank from Mazzucchelli Middle School, who works with sixth grade students with the Summit Learning platform. So now she's going to dive into the shifts that she has seen with her students.
So I said this at a parent meeting the other day, and it really stuck with the parents. I know these 25 kids better than any kids I've ever taught before. And I've taught quite a bit of kids over the years. And I think it's because of the mentorship piece. But I mean, I will know a student to the point of what they did last weekend to their facial expressions. Sometimes I just know they're not having a good day, to what they need to work on. I know they're not very good in math, but they're really strong in social studies and playing to that strength. Or they really like basketball. Maybe we could do a basketball project where they have to statistically, you know, figure out how many hoops they can make. But the biggest thing is knowing what type of learner they are. So I have a couple kids who really, really like videos, and they could learn from a video way better than reading an article. And just knowing, okay, you know, so-and-so really is good with reading an article and taking notes. So I'll present this project or this subject to them in this way rather than a different way. Another thing, and I know it's more math-based, but when I was in the traditional classroom, you have to get to, let's say, chapter 10 in the algebra book, and I can't stop. I mean, as much as I'd like to stop and revisit things, I still had to move on. So for those kids that didn't learn it, I just had to kind of just keep going. And the great thing about this is you have the kid who didn't understand it, but you kept going, can't go until they master it. But on the other spectrum, I would have a kid sitting there completely bored, having to wait 3 days to take that quiz or that test, and they don't have to wait anymore. They can kind of go at their own pace. So I like that too.
I guess one thing I'm wondering about is there's a lot of emphasis on classroom management and different strategies, and the students nowadays are more difficult to manage in a traditional classroom. Have you noticed any shifts in the students' behaviors?
I have. So the kids, I feel, are better about being in charge of their own learning and being more self-directed learners, meaning I can be doing a workshop with five or six kids, and I'm pretty positive to maybe a 90% sure that the other kids are all on task at that moment too. Again, the blue line or the expectation of this is where a sixth grader should be really motivates these kids to want to stay on top of it. I mean, you always have to make sure that everyone is doing what they're supposed to be doing. But for me, when you see personalized learning time, it is very hard to manage. It does take a special type of person. I love it, but it's more because I'm a math brain and I love controlling different aspects. So I like being, you know, you five go over here and do this, you three come with me, and then you guys are working on this. But it does take someone who you have to be a great multitasker, because I need to know where everyone is at the same time. And so it might look like chaos, but it's really everybody being on the same page doing what they're supposed to be doing. I'd say project time is the hardest thing for me to get used to, because I wasn't really up there direct teaching to a whole group anymore. I was, having kids, probably what you'd call more of like a blended learning type of situation. Different groups of kids were working on different things at different times, and getting used to that, because sometimes you'll have kids in groups and while other kids are working independently, and the room's louder. It's not, you know, I don't think there is a time in the day where they is literally are all just sitting there quiet, sitting in their desk, because everything is kind of moving, or I'm usually have a little group of kids, or I'm talking to a kid. I think the only time maybe might be during religion. So
the thing that stuck out with me in that particular segment was the mentor time. And this was something that when we were there watching this, seeing it happen, we didn't see mentor time, because I know there were visitors in the room and that can lead to distractions or can throw the scheduling off a little bit. But I did ask more not in the interview itself, but in the classroom when we were observing, I did ask Catherine about this mentor time. Like, what is this? Why is it there? And she said that it was actually a part of the training in the Summit Learning program, that they require or highly recommend 10 minutes per week with each student. And that mentor time does kind of have a little bit of a structure to it as far as what to talk about. She usually, the way she was describing it, just kind of kicking it off first with almost like, how was your weekend, or what's been going on this week with you? Really nothing to do with math or content, but then eventually getting into, so where are you right now with your program? Are you on track? That kind of thing. What supplemental learning do you need? How do you learn best? I mean, all those conversations that you wish you had time in a traditional kind of scheduling, that is so difficult to find or is simply non-existent. So that mentor time, and I'm a firm believer personally, I just constantly preach to my own kids that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And right now, when you're sixth grade, that's middle school. I taught middle schoolers. Middle schoolers, when you go on the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you have your first level of food and water, your basic needs of survival. The second level is going to be safety. Do you feel safe? So providing that environment where students feel safe. And then the third one is going to be that sense of belongingness. And that is literally the only level where you have to directly rely on another human being. And that's what this mentor time is. It's building for those students that sense of belongingness in that learning environment. And that is huge. That's profound when it comes to learning. And you heard from her that she knows these kids better than any other kid she has ever taught, only because she has those 10-minute conversations per week where students are doing their personalized learning time. She's able to pull single students over and have that mentor time. I think that's so cool.
Absolutely. Like, you talk about the benefits on the students, that they have that sense of belonging within the classroom, but it also helps her differentiate or be able to give them the learning experience, the environment, the supports that they need to be successful, because she knows how they learn best. So I'm imagining this being more coaching conversation. So
yeah,
she's not necessarily telling them you need to do this because, but just kind of directing them in that direction based on what she knows about each child.
Yeah. And if this kid's stuck here, what's another way we could do this thing in helping them build that metacognitiveness where I learn better with a video. Great. Let's see if we can get you a video. Or I learn better just maybe by reading the textbook. Awesome. Let's take a look at the textbook and see what we can decode here within the text in order to figure out how to learn it better. You know, I think that's crucial and so cool with this program that it's built in to the, when we say, I know we're using program and platform quite a bit in the podcast so far. So let's pause for a second and differentiate. So the platform is going to be that electronic Summit Learning platform where they're doing the personalized learning, right?
Yes.
And then the program itself is the program plus other parts as a whole. So, and part of that is also this blue line.
Yeah, so she talks about that blue line. So think of that as the students are progressing at their own pace. So the Summit Learning platform shows them based on when they started the school year, they put in their breaks, when the end of the school year is, and then so they have the blue line to keep them on track.
Mm-hmm.
So the students constantly have that goal of where they should be. And so I'm sure that comes into play in the mentoring conversations as well,
mm-hmm.
reflecting on where they are in relation to that blue line. So it moves each week.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, I don't know, each week, maybe each day.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, true.
But it moves based on where they are in the school year and in order to finish up that personalized learning time for their grade level.
And we do hear this in conversations with other educators. I know that I've been at the table with you, with some other educators, and having this conversation about, okay, I understand flipped learning, blended learning, personalized learning. I get it. But the pacing is always the biggest question that is asked at the table that can't really be articulated by anyone, even myself. When we talk about personalized learning, is there a pacing? Is there truly a pacing? Or is it the big question that most teachers ask? What if they don't finish what they're supposed to finish by the end of the quarter or by the end of the semester and so forth? And this platform, Summit Learning, that blue line provides that suggested pacing for that cognitive level at that grade level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really kind of cool and helps that pacing, or it takes away that anxiety or that big question a little bit, and probably makes the process a little easier to facilitate for the educators too.
Yeah, because it's all provided there for them, so they aren't trying to curate resources to teach that content. It is there essentially for them.
Yeah, and that's something that we in the next segment here, when we talk to Katie a little bit, or Catherine a little bit, is the idea that what does your role look like as the quote-unquote teacher? I mean, we're hearing a lot of different stuff. And so as an educator, there are only so many hours in the day. And based on the current scheduling, the current curriculum, and so forth, that determines how you spend your hours. But in a format like this that feels so different, my big thinking was, what do your hours look like now? How do you spend those hours? So let's listen in on what she has to say about that.
It's definitely a shift in the way a teacher thinks of what teaching should be. You're more of a mentor or a person that guides students into thinking instead of just, I don't want to say spoon feeding, but being up there and kind of spoon feeding or giving all direct teaching to all kids at one time. I think my biggest shift was knowing when to pull a small group and also backing off from direct teaching and, you know, teaching them all at once. I will say my grading is a little bit different because I'm giving feedback more than I am actually just sitting down and giving somebody, you know, a 4 out of 5 points or 6 out of 7 points. When I was a traditional teacher, I spent a lot more time lesson planning and grading, whereas now in the Summit platform, I spend probably more time giving feedback and adjusting lessons or looking over the lessons that Summit provides ahead of time and making sure I can implement them. But probably the most time I spend is looking at the data and then based on that data, pulling those groups, whereas and as a traditional teacher, I feel like I probably didn't differentiate as much as I could have because where's the time?
And when you say data, you're talking about the data that's in Summit that is based on formative assessments.
Yes.
Correct.
So, for example, you know, not only how maybe things they need help on the formative assessment, but maybe they didn't get that assessment done, so I need to pull them and find out why. A big part of Summit is not telling kids what they need to improve on, having them come to it, the realization to themselves on what they need to improve on. And that's kind of a big shift too. Because I think at the beginning, kids would come up and ask me questions. And as a traditional teacher, you know, you just answer the question. But I'm kind of shifting it to how can they find out the answer on their own rather than me just giving them the answer, because that's not really going to help them in the future. So just little things like, what's the definition of this word? Or do you know what this means? They'll come up to me and usually probably I would, as a traditional teacher, I would have just told them and I'll be like, no, you can look it up and you can Google it and figure it out. So them problem solving on their own rather than having the teacher problem solve it for them.
Your role sounds very similar to a coach.
It is.
Prompting them and also asking those questions so then they can take off and solve on their own.
I don't want to think that the teacher doesn't have to have knowledge of the subject matter because they do, which I've noticed mostly with the science aspect because I'm not hugely awesome at science. So I still have to pull workshops, though, and I still have to teach them about science. So making sure you do know your subject matter is important. It's just that you won't be teaching it to 25 kids at one time. It might just be the only 6 or 7 that need it instead of 25. So
we know that you got to get going to your next class, but we appreciate the time of sitting down. I wish we had more time to ask more questions, but you just got to go teach. So
yes.
Thanks for the insight. And if there are any follow-up questions that we have, hopefully we can reach out to you and probably through email or something like that and just get some clarification so we don't say anything incorrectly within the podcast. So that way we can make sure we're accurate.
Yeah, I think the hardest part about me explaining it is I explain it thinking people have the background knowledge, and they don't always do. So I'll use acronyms or, you know, terms and things that it really doesn't, I don't think, will make sense until you actually see it or live it.
Yeah.
So.
One thing that is important to highlight, I think, from what Catherine was sharing is that whole feedback. So she is focusing on how the student can improve rather than assigning the point value or a grade, which signals to a person that the learning has stopped. It reminds me of a podcast I was listening to on the way to work this week from Jennifer Gonzalez, The Call to Pedagogy, and she was talking about the difference between feedback and feed forward. So typically we think of feedback as something they turn in an assignment, we give them a grade, hey, you could do this better next time, but they never really get to go back to that paper and make the improvements to make it better. So feed forward is where the students present a problem, they're asking for advice, and through coaching conversations, which that is where Catherine comes into play, she's giving those, I don't want to say suggestions because I'm sure it's just asking those probing questions to get them thinking more to how their product could be improved. So it's focusing more on the process of learning rather than that product.
And when you do focus on process over product, you have the best potential for growth. As you're supporting it, you're fostering it versus what you had mentioned when we have that final point value or whatever it may be, growth essentially stops. So it emphasizes, I feel like it emphasizes that learning is always ongoing. It never really has that final stop to it. But I like that term, feed forward instead of feedback. And I feel like people are trying to redefine feedback because essentially when we talk about when we assign an A, B, C, D, F, what feedback is that really giving? Is that something that's just an initial stop, like here you go, here's what you did, and there's no opportunity to get better at it, versus something that's not a number or a letter that could best allow that learner to continue to move forward with their learning?
Yeah, and I even think back to my schooling experience and when I was a teacher too, you take time to give the feedback on the assignment, but what does the learner really care about? What did I get on this assignment? What grade was it? And I have to say, I was guilty of it too. And
oh, me too.
I noticed my students doing the same. They look and, oh, I got, you know, 13 out of 15, rather than looking at the mistakes that they made and trying to grow and improve from them.
Yep. Yeah, I remember, you know, spending hours putting quote-unquote feedback on final pieces of writing or anything else that the student may look at and take into consideration for the next piece of writing, or they may not. It's just there. And so, yeah, I like how what she's describing as true feedback for the student to be able to move forward with their learning. And I think the other interesting thing for me personally was, she touched on this, the majority of my time, at least in the classroom, for sure, starting off, was definitely planning and grading. Hours of planning and grading. Every Sunday night was planning and grading time, right? So now that she's describing the platform and how she's no longer really constantly spending hours of planning and curating information, that's built into the platform, I think is important, because you understand then, okay, if my hours aren't spent there, I truly could spend my hours on mentoring, feedback, constantly looking at the data within the platform and trying to figure out what smaller workshops are needed for which students. I mean, that's really what we want as educators. And so I think that's really intuitive of the designers of the Summit platform to be able to say, we're going to research-based all of this and put that into the platform for you so you can spend your time doing those other things that focus on learning rather than the grading and the planning and so forth. But I do think it's important to note that, okay, because even I said this to Catherine, or I guess someone that day, I said, I always am a little skeptical of any program or any platform that promises we got all the content for you. I'm just skeptical of that because I say, how do they know what my learners need?
Yeah, and I think that's important to note, too, because it's based on the Common Core standards, the California state standards, and they do have they have access to a wealth of knowledge, the best research, but ultimately they're not in the classroom. This is throughout the nation. So in Dubuque, Iowa, what do her students truly need?
Yep.
And she can modify that content. So
yes,
she was able to add in the religion content. There was a point in the curriculum where the students were reading a book, but it really wasn't the text complexity that her students needed.
Right.
And so then she's able to go in there and modify it then for the next group that she has.
And that made me feel better hearing that, knowing that, okay, it's coming to me with well-researched stuff and everything else, but based on my learner's needs, I have the option to tweak and modify lessons and content and supporting resources in there as necessary. So I think that adds to it.
Absolutely. And I just want to also bring up, when we were visiting in the classroom, there was a student that came up to us and they were showing us this graphic organizer that they created. And she was able then to, it was an exemplar, and she was able to add it to the platform for the other students to see. So
that's right.
That empowered that learner.
Yes.
To then, I mean, it just gives them credit. And
yeah, I recall that little incident where when he did come up to us, I just find that very valuable, that when we put an emphasis on learning, if we have learners in the classroom that are providing that good information and be able to provide that extra support for other students, other peers, that's a win for everyone. So having that ability to add that into the platform for the rest of the students to be able to see as an example or to be able to use possibly just builds that piece of collaboration, communication, all those four C's that are always promoted all the time when it comes to proper technology integration use. And it was just really impressive to see. And I like how that student had the voice in this as well.
Absolutely. We want to thank Catherine for the time and inviting us into her classroom so we could see the Summit Learning in action. And this was part one of our series. And part two, we will be meeting with Lisa, who is an instructional coach for Mazzucchelli.
So thanks for joining us, everyone. We look forward to having you listen to the next episode. And good day from everyone here at Keystone.
The Keystone AEA proudly supports the Next Level Learning Podcast.